add up the pennies and the pounds will take care of themselves, my granny used to say.
Whoops, I guess granny didn't hear. No pennies anymore. Stephen Harper cut those too. But we'll take nickels, we'll take dimes, we'll take loonies and toonies and $5 bills and $50 bills and even $100 bills.
You can donate at rabble.ca/donate.
Rabble.ca/donate. Every little bit or every large bit helps.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Needs No Introduction, fresh voices from speakers of note. I'm Victoria Fenner. In our last episode, we heard part one of Earth Democracy by Dr. Vandana Shiva. Dr. Shiva is a globally influential voice on the topic of global food security from India. On March 29th of this year, she was invited to speak in Winnipeg by Powerhouse Producers, the Women and Gender Studies Association, and the Women's Center at University of Winnipeg. This talk was recorded by Michael Welch of the Global Research Hour at CKUW Radio in Winnipeg. Here now is part two of Earth Democracy, Dr. Vandana Shiva.
If 75% bees have been pushed to extinction, if climate change, 40% comes from industrial agriculture, every indicator, ecological, health-wise, you look at, it's going wrong. And all they do is, every time a scientist says, but this is what's happening, get rid of the scientists. There was a wonderful scientist in England who was asked by the UK government, which paid him £35 million, to study this GMO stuff and tell us what's going on. He wasn't an activist. He wasn't looking for anything. He was considered the world's top lectin expert. Arpad Putsai was his name. He did his work. And he found in 3 months of feeding trial that the brains of the rats had shrunk, the pancreas had expanded, the immunity had collapsed, and the intestinal system was totally damaged. He went to his director, they did a press conference. Within no time, a call goes from the US to the Prime Minister of England to say, get rid of this man, shut the lab. He was the first victim, because he was the first who did a study. But victims have continued. Every scientist who's done independent work on the impacts of genetic engineering has been hounded and lost their jobs. Amazing scientist at Berkeley, Ignatius Chapella, he went to study the corn in Mexico. And Mexico has not yet allowed GMOs. And he found it was contaminated with BT. He published his paper in the journal called Nature. Nature started to get these attacks. And Nature put a little thing, we retract this paper. It never used to happen before. There's a published paper, peer-reviewed, then suddenly you say, I didn't publish it. Later it turned out that the public relations company that works for Monsanto did what is called viral marketing. They cooked up the names of scientists and sat at one computer and bombarded the magazine with letters saying, we as scientists say this is not scientifically accurate. They've done that now with one of the top scientists of France, who used to be a regulator, but when he used to see the research from Monsanto, he realized it was very sloppy. He said, no, I have to find out for myself what's actually happening. First time a 2-year study was done. Dr. Seralini is his name. He was looking at organ damage, and he found the organ damage, liver and kidney damaged hugely. What he wasn't looking for was cancers, very high rates of tumors in the rats fed with GMOs. A scientist in Russia had found the same thing. 50% rats had tumors, and the offspring that survived, 50% died. Irina Ernikova. The Monsanto, and you know, they just, literally just five of them. There are five big corporations that are controlling the seed through genetic engineering and biotechnology. Their attitude is just shoot the messenger. Rather than withdraw a hazardous product, rather than find smarter ways to serve society, they continue to push failed products. The BT crops are not controlling pests. The Roundup Ready crops are not controlling weeds. They have given us super pests and super weeds, And we did a study 2 years ago, a global study, and we don't do global studies with big finances, big projects, top down. Our global mobilization is just telling people everywhere, write your report. If you're a movement, write your report. If you're a scientist, write your report. And it's totally participatory and it can be done with zero budget. Zero budget. The report is on the website of Navdanya. And when I had to finally give a title, you know, you always feel if you're sitting in India, oh, you know, but the US is doing fine. You're sitting in US, you say Argentina's doing very well. Otherwise, why would they be only GM soya? You put it all together, no place is doing well. At least the farmers aren't. In every place, Monsanto's doing very well. Because it's all about royalty collection. Let me give you the situation for India. So Monsanto came in illegally in 1988. I had to sue them in the Supreme Court because they violated every law. They didn't take any permission. They didn't go through any approval. And the only reason I came to know they're coming is because they were foolish enough to put huge ads in the newspaper. And that's the arrogance. You come in as a crime, you come in illegally, and you show off. Anyway, to cut a long story short, today Monsanto controls 95% of the cottonseed supply in India. 95%, just in 15 years. The price of seed jumped 8,000%. The issue is not the technology. The issue is the mechanisms of total control. How does Monsanto establish total control over seed? India's a very good example. The first thing they do is go to the farmer and say, your seed is primitive, give it up. It's called seed replacement. And they have armies of employees who go to convince the farmer, your seed is primitive. The second thing they do is magically get the government and public sector to stop doing its work. Our Cotton Research Institute used to release about 20 varieties of cotton today. Third thing they do is because they have such deep pockets, they get into licensing arrangements with local companies. And the companies can't sell anything but the Monsanto cotton, which is linked to royalties. So every year from India, Monsanto is extracting 1,000 crores, which amounts to 200 million annually. In India, the farmers in the cotton areas are in a deep, deep debt trap. And so we saw a new phenomenon of farmer suicide start in India as these seed monopolies were established. And one of the things the industry keeps attacking me for is that I'm lying about the farmer suicide. And from somewhere, they've cooked up a figure of a flat line by taking national statistics. But cotton grows in four states. And if you want to see if an agrarian crisis is being triggered in the cotton areas, which are now 95% BT cotton, then you look at the cotton areas. We have started in this area one of the most difficult processes of seed saving because cotton seed had disappeared. So we had to travel really to remote areas to find native cotton seed. And the good thing is the native cotton doesn't cross with the American hybrid. So it can stay pure and it doesn't get contaminated. Then, of course, we've been teaching the farmers how to go organic. And after that, we've been working with them to get their cotton to the old Gandhian ashrams where there's hand spinning and hand weaving. Then we do vegetable dyeing. For me, it's never been about how big you become. In fact, it's the opposite. You've got to avoid bigness. The only thing that doesn't know how to stop growing is the cancer cell. Limitless growth is the logic of a cancer cell. And corporations have become a cancer on this planet because they don't know how to stop growing. Worse, they try and destroy everything that comes in the way. Just like a cancer tumor destroys the body on which it is thriving. For me, it's a moral, ethical, ecological alternatives imperative to deal with what is happening to our planet and to our lives and to our freedoms. That is why I started Navdanya. That's why I started seed saving in 1987. 1987, the corporation said we'll be five companies controlling the food supply and health sector of the world, because the same companies that created the war chemicals, gave you the agrochemicals, now have taken over the seed through genetic engineering and patenting. And then when they give you cancer, they're the same companies that have a patented cancer drug. So they can't lose. Just this morning, you know, our southern state of Karnataka has banned Monsanto Mahiko seed this year because of these repeated failures. So, of course, one of those 10 names that I mentioned, you know, his master's voice, says, oh, no, we don't need laws, because the market will solve it all. If it's failing, the market will reject it. The problem is, it isn't a market, it's totalitarian control. And every failure is a success. I realized this in 1984. I was traveling to Ethiopia. You remember? Ethiopia had that big famine in 84. And it's the same year when I was waking up to agriculture with Bhopal and the Punjab crisis. And on my flight, I was going from UNEP to Ethiopia to Addis, and the man sitting next to me asked, who am I and what am I going for? And I'm going to understand the causes of the famine. And I said, and you? He was from Pioneer Hybrid, which is now owned by DuPont. And he says, going to sell hybrid seeds. But I said, they have a drought. Hybrid seeds need irrigation. He says, that's fine for us. The more it fails, the more we sell. So every time the BT cotton fails on the field of a poor Indian farmer in the cotton area, Monsanto makes more money, because they sell not once, but twice and thrice, because there is no system of liability in this area. And you know the case of Percy Smyser in Canada, what they did, where they contaminate his crop and then say, you pay us a fine. No, they had imagined by the year 2000 everything would be GMO. From every seed planted, they would be collecting a royalty. That was their corporate vision. And because we built movements, most of the crops and most of the world is GMO-free. And that is why their new initiative is make farmers seed saving illegal. If we can't force them to buy GMOs straight, then we force them by destroying every alternative. The C18 is happening everywhere. I have helped the Europeans and the European Parliament to fight a law which doesn't even have the word seed in an act that thick. It's called plant propagating material. And seed has been reduced to raw material. It's all based on uniformity. If your seed is diverse, you can't save it. But all farmers' seeds and local varieties have diversity built into them. It's happening across Africa. I will be traveling in 2 months' time to help governments and movements in Africa to fight what they call seed harmonization laws. All of this is based on two distorted ideas, which serve consolidation of power. The first distorted idea is uniformity is a measure of good seed. You know, but if you put out a car, you don't want every car to have different functions. You know, they have to be standardized. Automobiles need standardization. Life needs diversity and evolution. So for those of you who are interested in this issue, go visit our website and download a manifesto we've done on the law of the seed, which we've drafted, on what are the real principles for the seed. The first principle is diversity. The second is quality. It's about nutrition and food and taste. And the third is resilience in times of climate change. You don't want a uniform variety that will fail if there's a drought, that will fail if there's a flood, it will fail if there's a cold, and that will fail if it's too hot. So, of course, they're ready with that one too. And that is starting to patent genetically climate-resilient crops. Our patent office rejected a patent application of Monsanto. It said, you're pretending to make an invention, but this is biology. Sorry, you won't get the patent. the United States government is threatening us, change your laws. Allow Monsanto to commit the frauds in your country as they've committed in our country. Because the Supreme Court of the U.S. ruled against a farmer who had bought seed in an elevator and grown a crop. His name is Bauman, in the famous case of Monsanto versus Bauman. A similar law like C-18 was attempted to be introduced in India in 2004. And as usual, these are not in the agriculture pages. They're in the financial pages. And I read these two lines. And because the seed has taught me too much, I picked up and said, so I went and hunted up in the parliament the draft of that law. And I realized it's about imposing uniformity to create corporate monopoly, criminalize diversity, and criminalize farmers who save their seeds. I started to travel the length and breadth of the country, hold meetings with farmers, explain the law, collected signatures. I took 100,000 to our prime minister, and I gave them to him. And I said, you are forgetting we are in the land of Gandhi. 1906, when they were trying to institutionalize the apartheid regime in South Africa, Gandhi was a barrister in South Africa then, and they wanted Indians and blacks and whites segregated by race. Apartheid means separation. That's what the word apartheid means. And Gandhi said, we will not wear these badges. We will not be divided by race because we are one citizenry. We will not cooperate with your law. And he led the movement on non-cooperation. That's the first time he used the word satyagraha, the force of truth. Of course, he went to jail, as did so many other Indians. But that was the beginning of the resistance against apartheid. ANC came up much later. Mandela was born 16 years later. Then Gandhi returned to India. The first satyagraha he practiced was against the compulsory cultivation of indigo. We were not allowed to grow food because we had to supply indigo for dyeing to the textile industry. And then in 1930, the British said, we need more guns to shoot these Indians who are rebelling. And what better way to finance the oppression than to tax salt? We will make salt making a monopoly. Now, we in tropical countries, you need a lot of salt. Even in freezing countries, you need a lot of salt for the road. We need a lot of salt to replenish our salinity, because otherwise you're dehydrated. Gandhi walked to the beach. It's called the famous Dandi March. Walked to the beach, picked up the salt water, and said, nature gives it free. We need it for our survival. We will continue to make salt. We will not obey your law. It's called the salt satyagraha. When I started Navdani in 1987, I said, we've got to do two things. We've got to defend the freedom of the seed and our right to save and exchange seed, but we also have to be prepared for the day we will have to say no to the laws that are being imposed. I told our Prime Minister that. I said, you can make this law, we will not obey. They haven't yet been able to introduce that law. I want to conclude by sharing with you how, over the last few years, as this coercive control of this handful of criminal giants has grown. And as I mentioned, they're the same who kill people by patenting drug. And they had the cheek in our Supreme Court to say only 15% of India is what they care about, the India that can pay for costly drugs. The rest can die of cancer and every other disease. They don't care about the farmers because their royalty doesn't come from the number of farmers, it comes from the acreage sown. And in fact, it's easier to control large acreage. So it doesn't matter what the cost, the social, ecological cost. As I said, every failure in terms of the Earth's evolution and every failure in terms of people's needs is a success for the market. It's a success for the corporation. And having realized that they're doing the same thing everywhere, we realize we have to globalize our struggle. And one of the ways we've tried to do it is create a global citizens movement for seed freedom. Seed freedom means multiple things. In India, whenever you have to talk about the foundation of anything, you talk about the seed. So there's a Bija mantra. You must have heard people chant Om. Om contains everything else, every other sound. That bindi, I started to wear this bindi when I realized what it's about. It holds the cosmos. In this little dot is the potential for representation of everything. So there's a Bija mantra, there's a Bija yantra. Bija means the foundation. So seed freedom is the foundational freedom out of which arise all other freedoms. But seed freedom is also the freedom of the seed to evolve. After all, seed has evolved over millennia. And seed has intelligence. And seed will be able to deal with the future as it changes. When we were coming in over, we were talking about the spiral garden that Natalie and her friends have grown. And we were joking about how with all the salt from the roads, you might actually have salt-tolerant plants evolving in that garden. But nature has intelligence. That's how seeds have evolved. They've adapted. And the adaptive capacity of seed is related to its diversity. When we do the A to Z, one of the top breeders of the world comes and teaches our colleagues. And now he said there's only one kind of breeding left. Breed with the farmer, breed with nature. He calls it participatory breeding and evolutionary breeding. And he says, wherever there's evolutionary breeding, there is never a failure of the crop. What you need is diversity and the capacity to adapt. And then, of course, seed freedom is the farmer's freedom to save seed. And I was fortunate enough to be put on the drafting committee of our law, which was supposed to be the equivalent of the UPOV implementation. And if you read the language in WTO, it says a sui generis system. Sui generis doesn't mean UPOV. Sui generis means self-standing. So we wrote a law that articulated farmers' rights. A farmer's right to save, exchange, improve, sell seed is non-alienable. And the industry doesn't know what to do. But it's not just farmers' rights. It's the right of the eaters. If the farmers don't have quality seeds, if those plants that cook the dinner today don't exist in our ecosystem, then where can we have a right to eat diversity? Where do we have a right to eat wholesome food? Where do we have a right to know what we are eating? So seed freedom is quite clearly a very fundamental freedom. On it rests the freedom of our food. And on that rests the creation of living economies and living democracies in these times where economies have become killing economies, killing our farmers, killing the earth, killing us with disease. And democracy, as we all witness, you have your share, we have our share, are rather dead. Because they've mutated from being of the people, by the people, for the people, to being of the corporations, by the corporations, for the corporations. So we have to create the real earth democracy. Every year from 2nd October to 16th October, we now celebrate a fortnight of freedom. With laser intensity and global resonance. Acting in our own ways, but focused with the same direction. 2nd October is Gandhi's birth anniversary. And Gandhi, his birth anniversary now recognized by the United Nations as the day of Satyagraha and the day of Swaraj and the day of freedom. Let's bring it into our lives. Let's recognize the laws that deserve to be not obeyed. And I would invite you to declare on October the 2nd, C18 will never be obeyed. We will save our seeds. And the reason we have to disobey is both because our commitment to freedom requires it, but higher laws require it. There are two higher laws that are being violated. The highest law of the earth, of Gaia, the rights of the earth, and the second, the higher laws of human rights, social justice. Our constitutions were meant to protect this. So we are, in fact, saying we will not obey laws that counter the laws of the earth and the laws in our constitutions, because you are violating them. 12th, south of the border is celebrated as Columbus Day. But indigenous people are increasingly celebrating it as Indigenous Peoples Day. You have such a strong indigenous movement led by indigenous women. I think it would be brilliant if around the world on the 12th of October we celebrate and articulate our cultures of protecting the earth, defending our freedoms, and cooperating with each other. The values that have been forgotten by the rich and the powerful everywhere. Again, a remembering of what human beings are capable of. Because we are being told we are not capable of taking care of ourselves. We are not capable of creating and producing. We are not capable of thinking. We are not capable of being free. So look out and share with us your ideas so we can just spread it as an amazing network of self-organization, but connected. And finally, 16th of October is World Food Day. This year's the year of family farming. It's basically the year of autonomy. It's the year where we need to honor every plant, all our grandmothers, our knowledge, the real producers of food. Last year, Monsanto and friends gave themselves the World Food Prize. And that's when I realized we've got to have our own honoring. Not of one person, not of one corporation, but everyone who, against all odds, is creating a good food system, a just food system, a loving food system. And you are all heroes doing that. Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Vandana Shiva, an anti-globalization author, environmentalist, and ecofeminist. Born in Dehradun, India, in the foothills of the Himalayas, Dr. Shiva is a world-renowned speaker on issues that threaten our environment and food supply. She spoke on March 29th at the North Centennial Community Center in Winnipeg at the invitation of a local collective called Powerhouse Producers. They produce this in association with the Women and Gender Studies Association and the University of Winnipeg's Women's Center. Her talk was recorded by Michael Welch of the Global Research Hour at CKUW Radio in Winnipeg. Thanks to CKUW and Michael Welch for allowing us to use that recording. I'm Victoria Fenner. Thanks for listening. Tune again to Needs No Introduction on the Ravel Podcast Network.